friends. Welcome to the Freedom Fiends. Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trash View and Nata Vista. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Please put on your 3D glasses now. We warm your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it over there, Lou?
I can feel it. I can feel the healing power of the fiends.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. It's awesome to be back with you, Lou.
Yes, yes, it is. It's such a rare pleasure, but here we are. I have time traveled from Wednesday to Monday, and here we are.
It's all spooky with these time differences, these day differences. Like, it's Monday where I am, it's Tuesday where you are, you know. That's
well, my normal night is Wednesday night, but because of some scheduling difficulties, I wasn't going to have a co-host on Wednesday. So Michael asked me if I wanted to just take the night off, and then he asked me if I wanted to come over here tonight, and somewhere in the email exchange, because I think he was getting my emails out of order because I was out in the middle of the far end of Bear Saskatchewan, and like the very outskirts of Bear Saskatchewan, where the cell service and internet service is like really obscure, and you kind of have to go stand on the top of the best, most properest rock to like try and get a signal and lift one leg up and maybe wrap some tinfoil around your head. Well, actually the tinfoil is just to keep the locus coeruleus in order, but anyway, so yeah, he sent me some emails and I was out camping again this weekend, and here I am without any sleep.
So in all that time, what Lou's trying to say is that he made sure not to read any of the show prep emails that I sent over ahead of time. But, you know, it is a special day. It's October 9th, which for some people who keep track of alleged assassinations, that's when Che Guevara was executed, allegedly, or you know, transported through Jump Gate over to Mars to join Tupac, etc.
And JFK.
And JFK, and
Elvis.
Marilyn Monroe and Marilyn Manson, the real one, and the real Elvis versus, you know. But anyways, were you ever swayed by the Che? Did you ever see it was cool to wear a Che shirt, Lou?
No. At the time that I may have considered it, I would have had no idea who he was, which means that I would have been like most of the other people out there that are wearing his shirts.
Yeah, so we're burying the lead. It means that there's a lot of people who don't know who Che Guevara is, and that's what, you know, Wikipedia is for. Someone
There's also a lot of people that swear to love the Constitution, but they've never read anything more than the Bill of Rights. So this is not a unique phenomenon. There's a lot of people that love socialism and communism, but they also like eating 3 square meals a day, which is kind of contradictory to their philosophy.
It is if you like the practical aspects of it, but allegedly, Ernesto Che Guevara was Argentine Marxist revolutionary, physician, author, guerrilla leader, diplomat, and military theorist, a major figure of the Cuban Revolution. His stylized visage has become ubiquitous as a countercultural symbol of rebellion and a global insignia in popular culture. So, yeah. And I guess I sent a little graphic on what people have done with that graphic, you know? So, I don't know if you got to see that little one.
About the only thing that you missed off of that was calling him a pet rock. Because
So that was from Wikipedia, which, you know, if you have any problems with Wikipedia and the accuracy of any information, I'd be shocked. Wait, do you have any criticisms of Wikipedia?
You know, it's really interesting that people say, you got that from Wikipedia? And
yeah.
I'm like, you got that from the Encyclopedia Britannica or some other one? The big complaint that they have about about Wikipedia is that it's user generated. So it's this big giant mass thing where everything's thrown together and people go and they submit their work. And I'm getting this right so far. Yeah.
Yeah. So far.
Okay. So people submit their work and then other people may have challenges for it and they'll have questions. What Wikipedia is good for is when you're looking at the articles on there, you'll see citations, so you can look at the original sources on there, usually. If it's something that doesn't have any citations or any original sources or anything like that, it's probably safe to be leery of it, but it's also safe to be leery of it if it was in someplace else. But because it's not a centrally planned and controlled website, with just the certain number of contributors and the approval of the Politburo before anything is submitted, then people have the tendency to say, no, it's bad, it's Wikipedia. But you get the same thing out of anything else. Just because it has some sort of, you know, name like Encyclopedia Britannica or whatever it is, that doesn't mean that's 100% accurate. That just means that it has a popular name.
Exactly. So
yeah. All the articles, it doesn't matter where it's written, is subject to the biases, the prejudices, the emotions, the amount of information that the writer has.
Wait a second. Are you saying that Wikipedia could have been corrupted?
I'm saying that everything could be corrupted.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's good to have a head check.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. I mean, even Trump.
You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
So anyway, okay, it sounds like I may have lost Daryl. With Wikipedia or any other thing, when somebody writes an article, they only have the knowledge that they have. They only have the information that they possess, and they're going to be limited by that knowledge. So if they are missing pertinent information out there, then it's not going to get into that article. Now, they also have their biases based upon their previous experiences or maybe their ideology, upbringing, whatever. They're going to look at these things through the lens of their ideology, through their experiences, and it's going to have a slant to it. So it doesn't matter if it's done by somebody on Wikipedia or somebody in, let's say, the New York Times, Washington Post, even the non-MSM, it doesn't matter who it is.
Even Fox News?
There's going to be that bias. Oh, are you back?
Yeah, I think so. You can hear me, right?
Maybe he's not back. So anyway, going back to that, so you have the experience and the biases. You're going to have, what else are you going to be looking at? Yeah, you're just going to be looking at a lack of information.
Fiend phone.
Now, the
Fiend
thing that something like a Wikipedia will provide that you won't get out of perhaps some of these other things, because it is user-generated and people can add to it as you go along, is you're going to have a lot more things getting put into it. So you're going to have a lot more different viewpoints and opinions and interpretations in there. Now, that can either be good or it can be bad. It could be like having too many chefs seasoning up the soup and you wind up with a big, salty, nasty-tasting bowl of garbage. But, you know, it's really hard to say. So
it's good to hear you talking
really
about soup,
don't
though.
I know what you're going to wind up with
can't
as far
me?
As the final product
oh.
goes. I don't know if Wikipedia has maybe a board that takes a look at the different contributions and figures out if it's something that is legitimate or if it's just nonsense. And
Nathan,
there have been
can you hear me?
Where people have intentionally submitted faulty information to Wikipedia, and it's gotten published into an article, and then they admitted, I intentionally put this out there to show you how bad Wikipedia is. So it's pretty well, in that regard, I guess that's pretty much a destructive action. So anyway, going back to this Che Guevara, let's see if my internet is working here. So in 1967, he was executed, and it's interesting that he's such a hero of the left because he has just this really crazy, horrible history of, nope, it's not working properly. So anyway, okay, here we go. On this day in 1967, socialist revolutionary and guerrilla leader Che Guevara, age 39, is killed by the Bolivian army. The U.S. military-backed Bolivian forces captured Guevara on October 8th while battling his band of guerrillas in Bolivia and assassinated him the following day. His hands were cut off as proof of death, and his body was buried in an unmarked grave. In 1997, Guevara's remains were found and sent back to Cuba, where they were reburied in a ceremony attended by President Fidel Castro and thousands of Cubans. Ernesto Rafael Guevara de la Serna was born to a well-off family in Argentina in 1928. You know, it's amazing how many of these socialist types come from well-off families. But anyway, while studying medicine at the University of Buenos Aires, he took time off to travel around South America on a motorcycle. During this time, he witnessed the poverty and oppression of the lower classes. He received a medical degree in 1953 and continued his travels around Latin America, becoming involved with left-wing organizations. In the mid-1950s, Guevara met up with Fidel Castro and his group of exiled revolutionaries in Mexico. Guevara played a key role in Castro's seizure of power from Cuban dictator Fulgencio Batista in 1959, and later served as Castro's right-hand man and minister of industry. Guevara strongly opposed U.S. domination in Latin America and advocated peasant-based revolutions to combat social injustice in the Third World countries. Castro later described him as an artist of revolutionary warfare. Guevara resigned. Some say he was dismissed from his Cuban government post in April 1965, possibly over differences with Castro about the nation's economic and foreign policies. Guevara then disappeared from Cuba, traveled to Africa, and eventually resurfaced in Bolivia, where he was killed. Following his death, Guevara achieved hero status among people around the world as a symbol of anti-imperialism and a revolution. A 1960 photo taken of Alberto Korda of Guevara in a beret became iconic and has since appeared on countless posters and t-shirts.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's B-I-P-T-U-N-I-A. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. Biptunia.com.
Hey, thanks for having me. So, what in the happy Halloween happened there?
Well, apparently you couldn't hear me or the board op, and I had a moment of making some bad radio because I literally was having a conversation with Nathan, and now I'm doing double bad radio, and I'm punching down at myself by mentioning the thing that I did wrong while I'm doing wrong by saying it even right now. Just saying.
Well, this is a teaching hospice. So I rambled on. I don't know if it went out, but I rambled on for a couple minutes. And
you drove it right into the break. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I couldn't hear the music because I couldn't hear anything else. But anyway, I thought that I lost you. So anyway, do you want to pick up where I left off?
Yeah. There are a lot of things that happened with Che Guevara. And for some reason, he was seized upon as a symbol similar to other symbols of revolution and creating you know, I would say unity amongst the people and change and things like that, and everyone getting a fair shake. Even though, you know, he seems to be linked with various types of murder and, you know, prejudice and such.
Yeah.
You know, serious racism, for example.
Is it alleged that he killed 2,000 people himself?
It is alleged. Which, mm-hmm. when you kill 2,000 people, whether... Oh, it wasn't 2,000. It was only 168. You know...
Are you talking about personally, or...?
Yeah, if it was personally, then I'm saying that little minutia detail makes you from a mass murderer to just, like, I don't know, still a mass murderer. You know, and there's no excusing that one. There's not saying, well, you don't understand, in their time period, in that time frame, that's what you had to do.
Yeah,
you know?
It was a different time. People,
those are different
people
times.
Thought a different way about executing people.
Yeah, it's kind of like wooden teeth and slaves, you know. Just these were different times, you know. So the Foundling Fathers, as you call them, right?
Yeah, or the Founding Lawyers. Take your pick.
Yeah, I like that one. But there's this other symbol of this time, and that's the one that creates bank inconvenience holidays. This was the symbol of Columbus. Did you ever see that story of this guy, or does that really matter to you?
Columbus? I've heard the story, but no, it doesn't really matter. It's not like I decorated my Columbus Day tree today because I was out camping.
You know, I didn't get you anything for Columbus Day, Lou.
Darn it. No card, nothing.
No card. There wasn't like a candygram. Is that still a thing?
I don't know. But anyway,
there wasn't. Yeah.
No, I remember that. Hearing the school version, the cartoon version of it, that Columbus was out sailing around and he came and discovered America and then like nothing happened until the English showed up here and really turned it into America. But interestingly enough, I believe there were some other explorers that had come here prior to that.
Like,
so prior to
other
Columbus
people
coming here. Yes.
Like not like the purebred Italians. Actually, Columbus was Genoan. So there was no such thing as Italy back in that time. In other words, you know, someone from Genoa would... Genoa, I'm sorry, I mispronounced it. So, someone from Genoa would not really consider themselves in any way connected to someone in Rome or Sicily at all. Not even slightly, you know. Or Venice. They wouldn't consider that, you know, connections either. They were very insular times, allegedly.
Well, didn't the Vikings come here before Columbus?
Yeah, and at this point, it seems archaeologically that people have been, arriving on the shores of the mainland, as we call it over here, for, like, I guess, millennia, many times over. Some from boats, some possibly across a land bridge, but I don't really know. Honestly, I kind of suspect the boat thing, you know. But that's my opinion.
Well, the Bering Straits could be a possibility.
It is a possibility. I mean, here we are, two hobby archaeologists, you and I, Lou, across the separated seas, and pondering on how people came to the mainland. So if you want to celebrate Columbus Day and think that this guy was amazing and great, would it help for us to pop that bubble now or rip that Band-Aid off? What do you think?
Tear it.
Rip. Tear it off.
give it a pull.
In a moment,
as much hair as you can.
In a moment when we come back, we get to explore greater ideas of great man philosophy, you know, following the footsteps of Ben Stone and other people. We'll see what we have in store. You can just figure it out ahead of time if you want to.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at bolehvpn.net.
Fiends. Freedom Fiends have returned. And during the break, we kind of figured out just about everything. We were going on into these various segments of the great men theory, people who actually worship Che Guevara, what we covered, and Christopher Columbus. What do you think about the great man theory, Lou? I mean, is that something you actually looked into?
Yes. I refer to it as the great man fallacy.
Right.
I'd originally heard about it from Ben Stone, the bank waker, and I remember hearing him talk about, you know, the great man theory, this version of history that's based around a special person that comes around once in a generation or so, and this person has like superhuman knowledge, wisdom, intellect, capabilities, things that mortal humans can't possibly do. It makes you wonder if they're even Earthlings, because that's how,
like, so crossing far the Delaware with like chunks of ice, you know, and you just got your knee up there, your chin into the cold wind, you know, like that.
Yeah. Or, you know, but we find out later on that half the ice fishermen in Michigan do that if they stay out on the ice too long in the spring. But anyway, yeah, these folks they're superhuman, and if not for them, then the forward ticking of the clock of human history would just stop. I mean, things wouldn't get invented, and stuff would just stop dead in its tracks, and if it did move forward, it would be at a snail's pace. And really, it's nonsense. It deifies mortal humans is what it comes down to. And the reality is that these people, they're not gods. They're just men. They may be a little bit more capable than others, but there's no special knowledge, wisdom, or power, or anything like that. It's not virtue. It's, you know, they know a couple things, and they made stuff happen. But the big thing is, these people, they're credited with these monumental things, but in reality, they built upon the accomplishments of others. So, for example, Bill Gates is credited with a lot of stuff in the computer world. But could Bill Gates have accomplished what he did if not for the works of others before him? You know, people that had done stuff before he was even born. So, yeah,
I think he did everything, didn't he? He kind of invented the computer and the internet.
As a matter of fact, he went back in time to before he was born to set that up for himself so that he could do it after he was born and became like an adult.
That's convenient.
Yeah. So the question is, what do I think of the great man fallacy? That's exactly what it is. It's a fallacy. And if it wasn't for Bill Gates, then somebody else, maybe two other people, maybe three other people might have come along and they would have done it, and maybe they would have done it better. Maybe one other person would come along and replicated or did things slightly differently, and things would have happened. You know, it might not have looked the same. It might not have been on the same time schedule, but it would have happened, because I mean, ultimately, what is a computer other than computers talking to each other? I'm sure once the first computer was built and you had another computer nearby, you said, hey, let's see if we can make these things talk to each other.
I'm sure it's pretty much innovation is going to keep rolling along. And when you were mentioning the great man theory, I think you certainly mentioned fallacies. This certainly is the appeal to authority. It's several other fallacies besides, like the appeal to tradition, appeal to popularity. I think tribal groupthink, I think things like that, they just come in handy for isolating real critical thinking problems, you know? And where did that critical thinking problem start? And I go back to usually some type of childhood. Well, that's my opinion.
Well, the thing about the gray man theory, because as I mentioned before, it's the deification of mortal men, and people seem to have a tendency to want to believe in a higher power than themselves. Maybe not necessarily an actual deity, but perhaps a deified human, or they want to have heroes. So we start learning at very early ages, You know, well, there's these heroes out there. And most of the time, when we're learning about the heroes in the government schools, these heroes wear costumes, I mean uniforms, and those are the real heroes. And you become a hero just by wearing that costume, I mean uniform, and you don't really have to accomplish much. But when it comes to other people, you know, like people that actually do accomplish something, I think people have the tendency to want to make them into more than what they are. Interestingly enough, and this goes to the whole thing about success and then also resting on your laurels, which a lot of people have a tendency to do after they come up with one great innovation. That sometimes people will have a tendency to rest. And I believe the quote comes from Thomas Sowell, and it says, success must be renewed daily, but a person can ride an alibi for an entire lifetime.
Yeah, I think a lot of people like to drive the victim model of alibi. You know, that's the one that they usually lease or take home, you know.
They buy that and drive it till it rusts.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a real fixer-upper, that victim alibi.
Yeah. And you know what? These people talk so much about being survivors of things, but they're still acting like victims. They haven't moved on. They haven't gone from victim to actual survivor. And to become a survivor, that requires going into recovery or moving forward or taking the next step or shedding your chains.
Right. And when you're involved in therapeutically helping people shed the chains of their inner victimhood, it really helps to help, you know, get people involved in punishing themselves for being so messed up. You know what I'm saying? Do you do that in your profession, Lou?
No. I don't talk to people about punishing themselves. I talk to people about forgiving themselves.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I meant to say.
Yeah. They don't need to punish themselves. There's plenty of people out in the world that'll do that for them at no charge, might I add.
Yeah, pretty much. It starts when they get them young, basically. That's my theory. Mm-hmm. And that's how you can create all this powerful tribal groupthink.
Before we go back to Columbus, I want to talk about something. It's the opposite of the great man. And the great man is usually considered the hero. But the opposite, and you can't really have a great man without the opposite, the great man is the bad guy or the boogeyman. So the boogeyman theory, and that is that there is some evil, wicked, mad scientist type sitting in a room somewhere petting a cat and giving orders to guys that are pushing carts back and forth in this big, giant space-looking thing. But the whole thing about the boogeyman versus the great man is, with the great man being the hero, you need a balance to that. And the boogeyman balances out the great man. And the great man balances out the boogeyman. But without this evil villain out there, this arch kingpin, that kind of lessens the impact of the great man. Because the great man has to go up against somebody. He has to have an enemy to fight.
And that goes into
the legend goes.
Yeah, totally. And that goes into the actualities of, you know, the 2 minutes of hate in 1984. You can see that happening with people just going in deeply hating against certain, say, I don't know, orange pigmented presidents, for example. Yeah, there's a lot of
pigmentation.
It doesn't matter that the pigment, what matters is that the 2 minutes of hate, that type of thing that you can see in George Orwell, a.k.a. Eric Blair's book, 1984, where people in a sort of worshipful frenzy go into this theater and you have a picture of the guy that's the boogeyman that you described, Lou, and everyone is just starts immediately shouting and, you know, shouting obscenities and raging and shaking their fists at this face, basically. And then it's all over. Yeah. And that I'm seeing that happening on Facebook, and I'm wondering, did you guys actually remember reading this one? Because, you know, when you're doing what you see in a book, doesn't that give pause? I think there's a Mark Twain quote for that one. When you find yourself in the majority, you know.
I'm not familiar with that quote, but I'm always surprised at the number of people that I look at, and I see what they're doing, and I think to myself, my God, you, as you were reading 1984, you were taking notes saying, yep, that's a good idea. Yep, like that one too. And I really see people doing that.
You really did see people doing that?
Well, metaphorically,
I
see people. I see people replicating the behavior.
But I don't see them aware of it. It doesn't seem like they really connect the dots between that specific book.
No,
you know,
no. They're completely unaware of it. Look, a good example, and I think this is still going on right now. I really don't follow this subject a whole lot. Football and players kneeling during the government's theme song. And a couple weeks ago, everybody was freaking out over it, and they were freaking out the week before. And I just look at the weekend as a new season of The Walking Dead, and instead of who's Negan going to beat up with his baseball bat, you know, who's going to freak out over a player kneeling during the government's theme song. And what's really amazing is if you go into some of these comments, particularly on like a Fox News page or some sort of conservative page, these people who talk about radical Islam and being a bunch of savages and everything else, they'll talk about the radical Muslims that will kill people for drawing a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad or burning the Quran. Yet these same people call for the heads of anybody who burns a flag and calls for violence against people that don't stand up during the government's theme song. And quite frankly, a lot of these people are just jihadists in disguise. They're jihadists with a lighter skin and beer belly.
I think I've even seen humorous videos where they have these, you know, and cartoons where the two extremes, the Muslim terrorist and the I guess American patriot, you know, like name all the things that they love doing, like such as lynching people and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they see everything they have in common. And you start to see hearts form between them. You know,
I've seen that cartoon and I've seen the memes. There's one. It's called the All. I'll tell you about it during the break. It may be a little bit risque for the radio show.
We'll be back with more Freedom Fiends.
Listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BipCot NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's BIPTUNIA. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha, biptunia.com.
Worms, are you there?
Worms ain't here, man.
That is you, Lou.
And that is a riff on the old Cheech and Chong bit. Dave's not here, man.
It's good to tap into history, like Cheech and Chong, and other history you're going to tap into.
Yes. As a matter of fact, we need to start tapping on Christopher Columbus.
We need to.
So what are the five things about, the five myths about Christopher Columbus that we need to know?
The first one that I've got in this silly little article that I pulled up from the Washington Post is essentially that people did not conceive that the world was flat. The world was round was a very popular concept at that point, basically. So, in the words here, in an early scene in the 1992 Ridley Scott film 1492, Conquest of Paradise. Columbus gazes out at the Atlantic Ocean with his son. He tells the boy that the world is like an orange he is peeling, round and not flat. In this traditional rendering, Columbus is an enlightened scientific figure, a pre-Galileo surrounded by obscurantists, determined to scuttle his plans. We owe this myth to Washington Irving, who Americanized Columbus in a best-selling 1828 bibliography. Already known for Rip Van Winkle and The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, Irving was a dedicated Hispanophile who researched Columbus's life and voyages while living in Spain in the 1820s. Despite careful scholarship, Irving peddled the all-American idea that Columbus was a hands-on seafaring man, willing to challenge immobile academics who couldn't see past the horizon. In reality, that the Earth is more or less spherical was not news in Columbus's day. The question was size, shape, and how much of it was covered by oceans. Columbus would eventually opt for a smaller pear-shaped world versus the rounder orange. Did you know that he was kind of into the pear-shaped thing? Because he was kind of going pear-shaped to himself. I'm just making that one up, of course.
Pear-Earth theory.
Yes, it is like that. So that's one of the first ones as far as these number one. Number two is Columbus was Italian.
Hang on. I got a quick question. Okay, so he figured out in 1492 that the Earth was not flat. Then why are there still people on Facebook claiming that it is?
Because it's popular, and if you go with the right tribal groupthink, you might get the pretty girl or the nice job. I don't know what kind of job you get or girl you get by claiming flat Earth. Maybe you get into some position of power in Burning Man. That's a coveted position for some people, Lou. Don't scoff that. Well, okay, scoff it if you must.
I think I'm gonna pass. As far as a career, no, I don't want to be a clerk at 7-Eleven for the rest of my life.
Yes, that's one way to think of powerful positions at Burning Man. Is clerk at 7-Eleven.
Actually, the guy that delivered my washer and dryer when I moved into this new place, we're talking. He says, "Now you know what I really hate that they teach in the government schools that I absolutely can't stand, and it really bothers me." I'm like, "Oh God, what's this guy going to say?" Because he's talking about how conservative and libertarian he is because he listens to Glenn Beck and everything. I'm like, "Oh God, what's this going to be?" He says, "I can't believe the lie that they're teaching that the Earth is flat or the Earth is round." I'm like, as soon as this guy gets the washer and dryer up the steps, I'm telling him to get the heck out of my house. Nah, he was cool about it. He wasn't like the typical flat earther on the internet. He didn't start screaming, "Do your research, where's your documents," and all that other nonsense. So he was cool about it. And I'm just like, really? Let's say that you found out that the world was flat. Then what?
Well, then you got to draw the line. I mean, at a certain point, when someone's showing up with pamphlets, pulling up over here, trying to talk to me about it, show me their pamphlets, and get me to show up to their worshipful place, then they've crossed the flat earth line with me. Just saying.
Well, the one of the big arguments I always hear is that, well, it'll prove the government's lying to us. And I'm like, if you need flat earth to prove that the government's lying to you, then you've been falling for an awful lot of stuff.
The earth is... I just can't see how it works as a plate.
If the earth was flat, cats would have pushed everything over the side already.
Worms.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Welcome back. Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite of LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Please insert the purple wire into your cortex now. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah.
It's good to be back.
Really? It is.
Yeah, it is. It is. You gave me lots to think about, Lou, in that last hour about groupthink and my own compulsion to be certain on my conclusions that obviously are the same ones chosen by my tribe, you know?
One of the things, because I wasn't born in, well, I may have been born an anarchist, but I certainly wasn't raised one. One of the things I've had to do over the years, going from child to young adult to middle-aged adult to, well, I guess I'm middle-aged adult now, or middle-aged-ish. But I really had to re-examine a lot of the things that I thought that I believed. I had to re-examine everything that I swore was true, everything that I swore with every bit of my, with every fiber of my being, and I really had to re-examine it, and it's not a bad thing to re-examine where you're coming from. It's, how could I put it? If your ideas are good, they should be able to stand up to the scrutiny of questioning.
So that would you should be nice.
You should have no problem with asking yourself these questions. And yeah, there's going to be times where maybe you can't answer the things, you can't answer the questions that you're asking yourself. That doesn't automatically mean that you're wrong, because there's a lot of things that exist that I can't answer the questions on. I can't explain to you how the internet works yet. I go and I turn on my computer and half the time it's there.
Well, I mean, can you explain what were the troubling questions that you were resistant to answering that, you know, took you on this quest of knowledge?
Well, I guess it goes back to this whole great man theory of history, or great man fallacy, as I prefer to call it, that there are these wise men out there that can make these decisions and guide the way, and everything will be all right, you know, so long as you believe. And it's kind of like the Wizard of Oz in some regards. Once you see that the curtain is pulled back and that the wizard is not actually a wizard but just a regular person, then, yeah, the magic's gone.
I have a theory also that it comes down to some level of humility. I think that the acknowledgement of having been fooled, you know, realizing that that so-called education was an indoctrination center called government school.
There's a wonderful Mark Twain quote on this subject. It says, "It's easier to fool a man than it is to convince him that he's been fooled." And the conversation that I saw earlier this evening before I tried to lie down to take my nap was talking about all the Trump supporters that are making excuses, and quite frankly, a lot of the stuff that's being said to defend him is just absolutely ridiculous, because all these constitutional conservatives were thinking, oh yeah, he's not part of the establishment. The establishment hates him, therefore he must be a good guy. And quite frankly, the enemy of your enemy is probably a jerk also.
Perhaps the enemy of my enemy are all puppets being controlled by my real enemy, is usually what I presume. You know.
Well, that's a possibility too. But it's really amazing, the people who think and slogan and talking point. There's a lot of decent slogans out there, but there's also a lot of them that if you give them a listen, you find out that they're just absolute nonsense, and that the enemy of my enemy is my friend is one of them.
Yeah, and that's just if you say it often enough, maybe people will believe it. Kind of like if you say Columbus discovered America often enough, people will believe that. You know,
especially if you start teaching that to kindergarten students.
Yeah, it's a good thing they didn't pledge allegiance to Columbus. That would just be twisted and weird, you know.
They didn't get around to it. So anyway, yeah. Speaking of Columbus, let's get back to Columbus. So he disproved the flat earth theory. What else did he do?
There, yes, it's true that this actual article does touch on each of these myths. That allegedly he was Italian, and it seems like basically when Columbus lived, there was no such thing as an Italian. Italy did not exist until 1861. The best evidence suggests that the explorer was actually born in a village near Genoa, which is part of Italy today. To his deathbed, he proudly claimed Genoa as home. In Columbus's lifetime, Genoa was a fiercely independent republic with its own language, currency, and overseas colonies. Its commercial ties with Castile and Aragon in modern-day Spain were intimate. So it had like serious business relations with Castile and Aragon, which are two places in Spain that I just learned about just now. So Genoese trading colonies in Seville, Barcelona, and Lisbon were sizable, and some Genoese married locally and naturalized Castilian, Catalan, or Portuguese subjects. So this is just to say the idea that Columbus was not really Italian in the normal Italian sense. You know, that's one of them. Does that really matter to you or me, Blue, that he was Italian or not?
You know, I got my history lesson from The Sopranos. I remember there was an episode.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, where they're in the shop, and one of them's freaking out because they're selling espresso or cappuccino for like $5 and everything else. And they're talking about Columbus and how he was Italian and everything else. And the whole selling the cappuccino is like, they're raping my culture. They're raping my culture. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, it was very comedic, but anyway, I had no idea that would be the script for many of the people today. But anywho, but the whole claim about Columbus being either Italian or not really doesn't affect me. I'm going to fall asleep at the same time after the show, regardless.
So we don't have to harp on about every element of this whole story. And when you're dealing with actual evidence of, at this point, 500 plus years from us, you know, what I'm going to claim right now is, please don't presume the accuracy of the information you're getting. I think there's an addiction to certainty. I just want to make that claim right now. I mean, I'll put it to the test. If you want to hear the other three elements of this article from the Washington Post, you can not call in, because this is not a call-in show. but I can ask your opinion, Lou. If you want,
you know,
to
what, let's rattle them off real quick, finish out the segment with it. That way we don't leave anybody hanging, because heaven forbid they should have to read the Washington Compost because we didn't do our job properly. So number three, Columbus was a successful businessman and a model leader. So apparently, no, that's incorrect, right?
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, I mean, he was supposed to come back with a certain amount of gold. He did not. So, you know, so coming back with a certain number of slaves, most of whom can't adapt to the new environment and die, also doesn't count as not gold, you know. So there were managerial mistakes. Number four, Columbus committed genocide. This was an interesting one. On Columbus Day, and let's see, what are they saying, really? He was clearly no friend of native peoples, but a document discovered 10 years in Spain suggested he was an equal opportunity tyrant. Witnesses testified that his brief government in Hispaniola was marked by routine cruelty, not only to the native Tainos, but also to the Spanish who defied or mocked him. Oh, that's an interesting thing. So this article, I'm trying to see, what does it say? It doesn't really prove that he wasn't a tyrant. In fact, it kind of skirts around the issue. This is
The whole thing about the genocide. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe he's accused of genocide because he had brought disease with him, and the disease that he had spread to the native population where he was.
Right, and then of course there were actual many accounts of him actually, you know, ordering the death of many people. You know, okay. Men, women, children.
Right. That I'm not aware of. So.
Right. And I'm just saying, I don't really know who is correct in this instance, the Washington Post version or what I just looked up long ago from, say, Howard Zinn, People's History. You know, just to start with. But number five is Columbus believed he had discovered America. That's certainly... For decades, U.S. school children learned that in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue on his way to... You were programmed to learn that he was discovering the New World. By the 1992 quincentennial. New academic scholarship had begun to seep into elementary and secondary history lessons. Today, few people claim that Columbus was the first European to sail the Americas. Evidence for medieval Norse voyages and colonization is overwhelming. So,
yeah, I mentioned that earlier. What? As a matter of fact, that 1492 Columbus sailed the ocean blue, that's also an Amy Grant song from like the early 90s. So I think that was before 1992 when they had come up with this new information, or should I say old information?
Well, this whole thing just comes through the Washington compost, so that's what I wanted to say. Just please put a serious grain of salt into that one.
Did Columbus actually land on the mainland of what's now the USSA?
As far as I know, no.
No, because it talks about Hispaniola.
Yeah, which is modern-day Dominican Republic and Haiti.
Yeah, so I don't believe that he ever actually wound up in what would later become the 13 colonies.
No, so that's kind of like it's one of those stretches to connect him, kind of like connecting Amerigo Vespucci to America, basically an Italian map maker and his name, Amerigo, to America. That's where I was told the name America came from. Okay.
Yep, me too.
Right.
Now, interesting thing about history, and this goes back to what I was talking about in that very first segment when we didn't know who got droned or if anybody got droned. It's always subject to the interpretation of the interpreters. And when it comes to history, talk to three different people that witnessed the same car accident, get the three different answers, and then apply that to everything else in history. We'll be back after this trip to the market.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
Welcome back to Freedom Fiends. Lou is prepared. I'm Daryl. I'm prepared.
Yeah, so, a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there's nothing like having access to the radio where we can choose to be topical, this being this alleged bank inconvenience day called Columbus Day. And we can choose to stay on topic or to flow to the great man theory, which is something we're really covering. Even the great boogeyman. We didn't name a lot of boogeymen, but we touched on that.
As far as boogeymen go, you have the Soros brothers, you have George Koch.
I think you have there's famous banking families, for example, and certain royalty, and
the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Morgans.
See, I didn't say it, but you did, so now all the attention could go on you.
Well, those are famous banking families.
Extremely famous, yeah. And then from there, there's the alleged wealth of the entire Catholic Church, like the Vatican hidden resources and things like that. The land holdings that the church has, like some of the biggest of the world, I think. So these are open conspiracies that seem to be verifiable, you know, and kind of like flies in the face of the separate entities kind of theory of politics. When I think like a narrative like what we described with Washington Irving coming up with the legend of Christopher Columbus as told to many school children, I think of like that's like perception management. That's kind of like where the great man theory kind of like, you know, comes from. I'm sure like there are versions of this across history. And then it creates days like Columbus Day where I can't do my banking, Lou, you know, so... Yeah, I'm just saying.
And, and the post office didn't deliver anything to you.
That's true. Although, luckily, you know, I just have drones go back and forth across the Pacific Ocean as needed, you know, but in my dreams.
Can I tell you another great man story that gets built up?
Yeah.
It's about another villain of history that gets deified. George Washington and his story, I cannot tell a lie. After he chops down the cherry tree, he tells his father that. You learned that in school, right?
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
And he was even wearing a powdered wig in the scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Washington's father died when he was a small child. So,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was made up as part of the ruse, part of the propaganda to get him elected as president.
No, his father was an angel in the vision. You know, it was a spirit, kind of like Obi-Wan or the ghost of Yoda or something, you know. Father,
the ghost of Qui-Gon,
I cannot tell
Qui-Gon
a lie.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Father, I cannot tell a lie. I chopped down that cherry tree with my lightsaber.
That's exactly what I had in mind. And that is the show title somehow. So... That's the meme.
But yeah,
if you can construct that, yeah.
Yeah, but with Washington, yeah, you have that little bit of propaganda there, and also the he didn't want to be president. He didn't want to be brought back into the public life. He was retired. He wanted to just sit back and run his slaves around and pull their teeth out and so that he could use them for his own dentures. No, that's complete nonsense. He came back out. He came out of retirement, went back into private life after Shays' Rebellion in Massachusetts, out in the frontier land of Massachusetts, if you can believe that. But yeah, people were freedoming it just a little bit too hard. They came up with this larger tax than what had previously existed, and it was much more onerous than what had previously existed. It required that the tax be paid in hard currency, and out in the frontier of Massachusetts, there wasn't hard currency. So you could have said that it had to be paid in unicorn meat. Well, there's no unicorn meat, because it just didn't exist out there.
And that was just an understood gangster tactic. This is what happens with power. See, the assumption was that people are reading history and they're thinking, oh, these are good people. They're there to save us. They saved us back then. And those were the good old days. And maybe there's small corruption nowadays, but back then it was all pure. That was kind of a story that was woven in there.
One of the reasons that they called the founding lawyers is because that's what they were. They were a bunch of lawyers. They were a bunch of power-hungry politicians. No different than the rabble that people are complaining about today. But because of the great man... fallacy version of history, they're deified as angels. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
And there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny. DJ, how do you like the fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT. .org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. It says stickers, and there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
And we got there. We're here. Welcome back to Freedom Fiends. Second to last segment. During the break, we got to figure out all of our travel plans and understand the subtler aspects of the compulsion for people to be certain on their strongly held group think conclusions, including the great man theory and the boogeyman, the great boogeyman theory. Is that what it's called?
Something like that. You know, it's really not that bad to say I don't know. It's not an admission of weakness, because if you think about it, how can anybody possibly know everything that there is to know? How can any person possibly be such an expert on a single subject that they know everything? And to top it off, not only would they have to know everything that was discovered prior to them entering the field and beginning their course of study, but they would also have to learn every new thing as it's developed. And it's impossible to do that. And once you give up on the ability to do the impossible, when you give up on the ability of mortal humans to be gods in their own right, that's when you can start to accept your actual limitations. And by limitations, I don't mean it as a handicap. I mean it as a reality, because we can't possibly know all these things. And to expect everybody to know all these things is the belief that central planning is possible, that there are mortal humans that are actually deities, and they're capable of all these different things, and they can make all this stuff happen just by envisioning it. And that's
kind of a problem, right? Because it's a little bit divorced from reality, but I guess it's just a very popular map of reality that some people are still driving. I think the demographics of who drives that map that you just described, Lou, what would you call that? What age group? What would they look like?
Well, it starts off with children. And you have the Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, the Easter Bunny. Whether you believe in a actual higher power and an actual deity or not, you know, there's a reason why children are taught all these things very early on. They're taught that the police are their friend and the president is the best, the smartest person in the whole wide world, and followed by the Congress and everything else, and the nine clowns in the robes. You know, they're taught all the stuff, and it's a regimentation to believe in authority figures. And if you ever hear people say, well, it doesn't matter if you like the president, but you have to respect the office. And that right there is a conditioning to believe in the office of the president. Maybe the president himself might not be good, or herself for that matter, but you got to respect that office. You have to respect the figure, the notion of a president, even if the people that hold the office are completely undeserving of that respect and adulation and affection.
If you don't like the system, you have to join the system and change it from within, right?
No.
Yeah, see, that's the obstacle right there.
Well, here's a thought for you. And you know, I'm going to call out Lou Rockwell on this. I generally like Lou Rockwell, but there's one thing that really, really, really bothered me about him with Ron Paul. And I like Ron Paul, but Lou Rockwell claims to be an anarchist, and he talks about the state. One of Murray Rothbard's great quotes is, "The state is a gang of thieves writ large." So he talks about the state being evil, and he talks about all the things that have been done by the state. And chances are, if you're an anarchist or voluntarist or no government guy, as some of us refer to ourselves here on the Fiends, why is that? It's because the state is a monster. It's a hideous wart-covered beast that can't be changed. It's following its nature. Government hasn't gone bad. Government has gone government. It has gone the only way that it possibly could. You know, almost as if it was preordained by fate. It is following its nature. So if that is the case, if you are an anarchist because the state is evil, then it doesn't matter if Ron Paul is the president. Because if Ron Paul is a solution, then the state isn't really the problem. And everything that Lou Rockwell said against the state was a lie. Because his friend, his buddy, his longtime friend could make it different.
Well, I mean, this is why it's important not to have a great man, and that includes Lou Rockwell. Because you can take some of the things that Lou Rockwell has said and written and find great use for them and utility. And then there are other things that, like what you just mentioned, that were said and maybe not as useful. Is that what you mean?
Not useful.
Like less than useful, possibly damaging, if you believe it.
I would say detrimental.
Right. So damaging, you know? So that's like an obstacle, you know? Like sowing misinformation, right?
Yeah.
That's why it's important not to take all the words from someone. So this includes certainly Rothbard, when some people would say take issue to what Rothbard says about children, I think, for example, and parenting. I think the same can be said for Aristotle and Plato and some of the elements that they went into. I like some things.
Everybody.
Take everyone a la carte, please, is, I guess, the general message of the whole great man theory. Take everyone a la carte as elements. Some parts are useful, some parts are problematic. And regarding the Libertarian Party, what are your thoughts on that one, Lou?
It was originally started as a spoof. It was originally created not with the intention of winning elections, but to go out and, to educate in some regards, but mostly to troll the system, to make a mockery of the entire process, is my understanding of what the origins were. And along the way, somebody got the idea of, hey, you know what, maybe we can get elected and hold office. And so we're not going to strike the root just yet, because we might be able to become the root. And you start looking at people like Gary Johnson, Gary Bake the Cake Johnson, and then Weld. Weld was a very special case with all his love and affection for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
So
Bob Barr. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, interestingly enough, my understanding of the term libertarian is that it was supposed to, when libertarians took that name, it was meant to show the opposite of what they are. So what it was doing is it was pointing out that they're opposite numbers. So just like the great man has the opposite of the boogeyman, the opposite of the libertarian was the authoritarian. Or in this particular case, the opposite of the authoritarian was the libertarian. And that's how that name got coined. And quite frankly, when you look at a lot of these candidates, they think they're going to win. And they're no different than the Democrats and Republicans in that they just want to impose their vision of liberty upon everybody. You know, people always say, this two-party system, this two-headed snake. Well, if the problem is a two-headed snake, putting a third head on that snake isn't going to make it less of a snake.
I think it just makes it more cool, like a hydra.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the problem is the snake, not the number of heads on there. Start chopping heads off with that snake, and then you get better.
And I think that the way to do that chopping, by the way, is the same way that, let's just say, Blockbuster Video was chopped down. And the same way that Betamax tapes were chopped down, the market spoke hard.
Interestingly enough, though, my understanding of the Betamax, and I was pretty young at the time, my understanding of the Betamax is that it was actually superior to the VHS, but it was more costly. And I don't know that it was more difficult to use, but there were a couple things with it. I think mostly was the cost.
Can I sell you some of mine?
No,
I'm just kidding. See, you wouldn't really be in the market. You wouldn't, unless you're an audiophile, you wouldn't desire to have Betamax tapes. It would be an oddity, you know, to have the tapes and the player compared to the present day technology. Yeah.
My family had the Betamax when the VCRs first came out, well, a year or two afterwards, and Betamax and VHS were vying for the place of dominance. And I know that when the video rentals were just getting fired up, that you could only get like a couple movies in Betamax.
You are one of those Betamax people. So you understand, basically.
I don't even think I was a teenager yet. So I wasn't a Betamax person. I was a Betamax kid.
And I grew up with the VHS, basically. So what I was referring to is that innovation is likely going to be the peaceful way to create solutions to these monopoly problems that we described, that you described, Lou, in detail, you know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Now, the Blockbuster is really interesting because I remember reading an article a few years ago. I think Blockbuster was still around at the time. And I was reading like an older article on Mises.org, and I think Blockbuster had wanted to purchase one of the smaller video franchises that was out there. The FTC blocked them, and shortly thereafter, I think the company that Blockbuster wanted to purchase went belly up. And eventually, Blockbuster went belly up. But what's really interesting is what took down Blockbuster. It was a mail order service and a vending machine. So Netflix and Redbox.
And then from there, what keeps the prices down in general? Torrenting. All the free files moving around, bits of files. People have a bit of it here and a bit of it there, all spread across the world, freely deciding to share these bits that collect together to form a person's file. So basically all this brain fruit or intellectual property, depending on what you like to call it, is being dispersed, and that keeps the price down too. So you can always get everything for free in most places. You know what I mean, right?
What's interesting though, I don't use that stuff because I'm not that technologically inclined. But what's really interesting is with Netflix, it started off as mail order and streaming wasn't even out yet. And Blockbuster didn't get on until it was too late.
We'll have to explain it soon.
We'll be back.
Soon.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BipCot NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's BIPTUNIA. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha, biptunia.com.
Discussing the complex nature of theme film that allows us to talk at vast distances and apparently to connect in and open up servers. We were also talking about Netflix and Redbox and the way they took down Blockbuster Video. Is that something you almost mentioned, Lou? Or
yeah, I started to talk about it. The early days of Netflix, and I wasn't involved with it at the time because I just wasn't doing a whole lot of video rentals, but you could order a bunch of movies from Netflix, and the advertisement was that you could get unlimited movies. They'd only give you so many at a time, but you could get theoretically unlimited movies. And they would show up at your door within like a couple days of ordering them. They really got on it, and I don't know how they did it, but they managed to keep the prices quite reasonable. I think the starting rate was probably about $7-$8 a month for the mail order stuff.
Yeah.
So I mean, that That's really not expensive at all. And then eventually, as the internet technology improved and the bandwidth increased and video streaming became more of a possibility, then
they started
offering they adapted. They started offering the streaming video, so you could get mail order and streaming. And I think it was like $15 a month for the two of them combined. Now, I don't know if they still do mail order, but I know for a fact that they do the video because they do. So anyway, I was able to download. Yeah, I just heard a voice in my ears.
I know, me too.
A board op. But anyway, I was just out camping. I was out in a place where there's no internet access or sketchy at best. You know, like I said, you have to stand on a rock with one leg in the air to try and do a Facebook status or check an email. And I downloaded a bunch of episodes and movies to my laptop for watching at night. You know, because it gets dark about 8 o'clock now.
And so you downloaded them in what fashion?
Oh, I downloaded them to my laptop, and I hooked the laptop into the TV through an HDMI cable.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
But that TV that I have out in the camper has a Netflix app on it. So if I'm in a place with Wi-Fi, or if I create a hotspot with my phone, then I can watch Netflix, you know, directly without having to run it through my laptop. Go ahead.
Well, all these things that you mentioned, they're all wins, basically, this being the redemption segment, the end of our show.
And it made things a lot better off for the consumer. Now, with Blockbuster, they eventually got onto that mail order thing of you could get as many videos as you wanted, but they got onto it a little bit too late. And then you have Redbox, which up and hey, you got a vending machine, you put your credit card or debit card in the little slot, it reads it, and you can get a movie just like getting a bag of chips out of a vending machine at the break room at work, except this is outside of the pharmacy, outside of the grocery store, inside the grocery store. Now it's all over the place, and it's real easy because you just go, you get your movie, you go home, watch it, take it back, and I think it's a very simple charge, you know, for a couple bucks for however long it takes you to watch it. I don't know that they have a specific time limit on there. I imagine there eventually would be a time limit, but it's
minor. It's pretty cheap, and it's innovation. And then you go a step cheaper, and those who do indeed torrent, they are actually accessing high quality data streams. Like, and at some point in the future, without IP, you could just go up with your USB or, you know, FireWire connection of choice and just basically, I don't know, digitally suckle from the digital teat, as it were, you know, to basically scoop up all the data you want. It all is out there to get, basically.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Now, what helps out Netflix these days is because they do offer a very low price. You also don't have to worry about catching viruses or anything from Netflix. So you do have that certain safety measure. As far as security goes, I think there's ways around getting busted by the cops for torrenting and streaming off of places where you're not supposed to. But I mean, quite frankly, it's the odds of getting caught are pretty slim, particularly if you know what you're doing.
At this point, it's all out there for free. Just saying, you can take advantage or not.
And trying to stop it is like trying to get pee out of the pool with a spoon.
Wrong tool, guys.
Thanks for having me out tonight, Daryl. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks to everybody for listening. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms!
Worms!